Welcome back to the Millennial Meltdown. I'm Pete Schulte for ECAV Radio and the Campus Ledger. If you're just tuning in, we are here again in the studio talking about the Martian with Professor Doug Patterson of Astronomy and Physics, Professor Lynn Beatty of Geology, and Lance Martin, our photo editor, who doesn't want to contribute.
I actually do have something to say that I was thinking about.
Now you want to talk.
Yes, okay. I know.
I see how you are.
It's convenient for me. Back to the dust storm for just a moment. I was wondering if it's possible that because of the atmosphere not being as, I guess, dense, you might say, as the Earth's, would that cause a difference in the suspended load of sediment that's in the air? And would that shape have anything to do with the shape of the landforms and also the solar power that he's able to receive?
Well, the dust storms are made of mostly silt and clay-sized fragments that are carried up to higher altitudes. And so that is where those big dust storms and even the global ones would be generated from and by. But in terms of Mars landforms, the landscape itself, right now Curiosity rover is generally in Gale Crater looking at Mount Sharp. And Mount Sharp is layers and layers of sediment and somewhat turned into sedimentary rock, too. But that was deposited by water long, long time ago. What the wind is doing now, as it's carrying particles from somewhere else, it uses those as kind of an abrasive manner, in an abrasive manner, and is sculpting Mount Sharp, for example, and giving it the shape that it has. But the layers within Mount Sharp are waterborne layers.
So it's more of an erosional effect than a depositional effect.
That's what's happening now, yes.
Understood.
All right, the non-science guy in the room just heard Chinese. So, all right. So, one thing that was sort of above my head in The Martian was Watney's use of the radioisotope thermoelectric generator, or the RTG, to heat the rover on his journey. So, two things here that, as the non-science guy. Is the RTG even a thing? I don't know if that's a thing.
Oh, it's absolutely
a
thing.
Okay. I don't know if that was Hollywood making stuff
no,
up.
No. It's been a thing for ever, at least in terms of spaceflight.
Okay, is this you know, we're going to... guy? I'm going to just leave because now I feel silly.
Well, no. Here's the reason why. Around your Earth satellites, we always see the big solar panels and things like that, right? Mm-hmm. But if you start going deeper out in space, you get twice as far away from the sun. All of a sudden, the solar intensity is 1/4 is what it was, 1 over 2 squared. You get out to Jupiter 5 times as far away. It's 1/25. You need 25 times more solar panels. So very quickly, solar panels become very inefficient. Also, if you need lots of power, well, you need lots of area, right? If you're out in space, maybe that works. But if you're on a surface, maybe it's a little less practical. The RTGs, you have a little pile of plutonium. And it is so fantastically radioactive that it actually heats up, gets very hot. And you can use that heat and convert it into electrical power. Use a transducer to convert that thermal energy into electrical energy. So they're very practical for deeper space missions, missions where solar panels may be less practical or not desirable. So yeah, absolutely, they're a thing. Most of our spacecraft to beyond Earth orbit use RTGs. The Voyager probes that were launched in 77 use RTGs, and they're still going today.
Okay. When can I get one in my car?
Talk to the DOD on that.
Okay. It seems perfectly safe. I just thought
sure.
Maybe...
Oh, you wouldn't need a heater in the wintertime.
Well, see. There you go. See, I am solving the problems of the world right now.
Well, to borrow a line from the book, in time your cancer would have cancer, so...
Look, that's a minor problem.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's
look,
future.
I've just saved tons of money by not having a heater in the car.
There you go.
The cancer aside. So so we did one thing that the other piece of that I was curious about was Watney's original plan of thinking, okay, well, I'm going to take the rover and maybe I can run without the heat before he goes into using the RTG as the heater. It struck me as a little odd, and again, not a science guy, not a mechanical engineer, but isn't the surface of Mars too cold for that to even be a feasible option for more than a, I don't know, a few minutes, hour? Was it a logical jump for him to make? I guess is what I'm asking.
Depends on the time of day and the season. You can get close to freezing temperatures, so 0 Celsius or 32 Fahrenheit, as your warmer temperatures on Mars. But yeah, the average temperature would be much too cold to be able to survive for any given length of time.
It also depends on how much insulation there is in the rover, and how much heat you can retain in the vehicle. Just from we're 98.6 degree space heaters, right? So trying to retain that heat versus losing it out to the environment.
Obviously, Mark Watney spends his entire journey essentially with Mars trying to kill him. It's not like he's facing some major plight of major disaster that happens. It's just general things on Mars and the fact that space is scary. Space is dangerous. Just being there, just showing up. One of the most important questions for me in the film was, in your professional opinion, and I know we don't have technically a psychologist here in the room, but do you really think an astronaut could survive 500 plus souls on Mars with only having disco to listen to?
Well, as long as it doesn't have the Bee Gees, he's okay.
Hey, I'm a fan of the Bee Gees, okay? It's about the only one I'm good with. So,
one of the things when they're selecting astronauts, in order to become an astronaut, not only do you have to be very physically fit and intellectually fit, but also psychologically fit. It's a certain personality profile that becomes an astronaut. I would not pass. I definitely would not pass. But, so there is some pre-selection being done. Is this the type of person who can focus over long periods of time to solve problems? Right now on the International Space Station, they're doing a very long experiment. A Russian cosmonaut, and I forget the gentleman's name, is one of two twins.
Mark Kelly?
I think so. Is up there. They're doing an entire year on the International Space Station. Now they got people there to talk to, but it's still a year inside of a tin can with nothing but vacuum on the other side, right? And so it's not like you can go step out on the porch for a breather or get away from people.
I can't even stay in my house for the week.
I know, right? It does take a unique person. Your average person off the street would, as you kind of alluded to, would probably crack. Being alone with so many things trying to kill you on Mars. But especially for a Mars mission, the selection would be even tighter to get people with the right type of personality, the right type of mental framework to be able to do exactly what Mark Watney is doing in the book and in the movie.
And that's why NASA is doing tests with several people together in a version of the HAB, if you will. And they've been doing stints of, I think, 2 weeks, and they're going to up that to, I think, 60 days soon. So I want to see if they can get along with each other and still concentrate and be psychologically healthy for longer periods of time.
Oh, I can't get along with my roommate for longer than 60 seconds. So, yeah. So all I took with her that was that NASA's training program has an extensive course in listening to disco. Is that accurate?
No.
I thought I was learning so much. So it's Justin Bieber then, clearly. Because if you can survive more than an hour of Justin Bieber, you're probably an astronaut. Is that an accurate?
that's probably true.
That's the accelerated program.
Okay. I just thought that, that was... I'm just checking. I don't know. Again, I'm no expert. That's all I'm saying. So, we're going to take another short break. You are listening to the Millennial Meltdown here on ECAV Radio. We will be back shortly to talk about Mark Watney's face shield cracking.